smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Dogs are pack animals. They're used to functioning and living in packs. And generally speaking, and perhaps in every case, there's a leader of the pack. When you live with a dog or dogs, probably you want to be the leader of that pack. And today we're going to talk about how you can do that with Penny Locke, a dog listener. Now, that's a phrase you may not have heard, but you'll be learning a little bit more about it today. Penny studied with a woman named Jan Fennell, who originated this particular method of understanding and connecting with your dog. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast. And welcome to you, Penny.
Thank you very much, Joanne.
When you came to my home today, Lulu greeted you at the door, as she always does. And knowing that you were a dog lover, this is your work, I was surprised that you didn't immediately greet her back. Tell me why you didn't. There was a very deliberate reason there.
Sure. And thank you again for having me on the show. When you first arrive, like when I first arrive at somebody's home, if I then pay attention to the dog right away, I, in my body posturing and such, I'm making that dog very important. I'm giving responsibilities, I'm giving importance to that dog. And what I ideally want to do when I come into a home or when I'm going out and about and I'm meeting a dog, I want to show them that I'm a decision maker, I'm a leader, and I will greet them when I choose to. So by showing her that she was not that I didn't care about her, but I was showing her with my body language that I will greet her when I'm ready, so that I can turn around when she honors and respects my personal space, then I can choose to invite her into my personal space. And then I can call her, Lulu, come on over. And she can choose to come over or not. You know, if she chooses not to come over, then I'm just going to ignore her for a little longer until she feels like, well, maybe it would be good to go over and see Penny now. So
you've been doing a little dance, you and Lulu, since you've been here. And you told me you won a round.
I did. I won one round. I moved myself away from her, and because movement will cause submission. And by causing her to come to me, I was saying that I was higher ranking, if you will, than she was. And she did come to me, so she was honoring that. And I was able to give her loves at that point.
You were exposed to this work from your father, who came and visited you from the UK and had an experience with your dog at the time. Tell us about
right.
that.
Well, at that point, we had Jordan, who was a yellow lab. We got through lab rescue. And Jordan's thing was that he would charge the front door.
Oh, they don't all do that?
Well, he was pretty scary. He was 90 pounds, big bark. And we see that as greeting. We see that as, oh, he's missed me. And this work teaches you that actually there's some dynamics to that. There's something deeper than that involved in their greeting. So anyway, Jordan would run to the front door and want to deal with things at the front door himself. So my dad came to stay with us, and he tolerated Jordan for the week or whatever. And then when he returned to the UK, he mailed me Jan's book, The Dog Listener, and with a little note, a little sticky note on it, said, maybe you can glean something from this book, which I took as very unsubtle, you know, your dog needs help. And I really couldn't put Jan's book down. It really spoke to me, and it gave me a really different perspective on how Jordan saw the world. I had really never considered that Jordan had a perspective, that he was just our dog, our family dog, and he had these, he was aced classes. He was brilliant in class, but when he came home and he felt like he had to deal with things, there was something else going on. Well, Jan's book taught me what his perspective on life was.
He's trying to protect the home?
Absolutely. It was his job. I had somehow given him this leadership position. His role in life was to look after us, to be the responsible one, which he can't possibly do or couldn't possibly do because he's a dog. He can't define our world. He doesn't understand our world.
Well, at 90 pounds, at least, he could perhaps scare an intruder. Lulu
certainly
can't even do that.
Certainly not.
So she, too, runs to the door and barks at people and lets us know that they're coming. And we spend a moment or two trying to calm her down and assure the person on the other side of the door that they're not going to be attacked because, in fact, small dogs can be. You know, can nip at your ankles.
Absolutely.
And things like that, though she never has done that. But you're saying that I can teach her not to do this.
Right. Well, if you look at it again from the dog's perspective, this is one of the big four that we teach. There are four areas of this Amishan bonding that Jan has developed that teach us that we can show leadership, we can show this role is ours to our dog through these four areas. The one that Lulu and Jordan was most concerned with was what we call perceived danger. What's that? It's a threat. And the daily life is filled with what we call 1,000 threats. We don't know what's going to set off a dog. That's fairly straightforward because it's, you know, an unknown at the door. It could be a paper bag flying around. It could be a noise. And they have acute senses. So
a shape that's large and unknown.
Absolutely.
In Lulu's case, any dog that's larger than she is.
Okay. Sure.
She's fine with dogs her size and smaller.
Right.
Any dog larger, right. She bares her teeth.
Sure. I understand. Well, as I say, it could be anything that sets a dog off. It's one of the big four, as we call it. Perceived danger, if you can go to your leader and report that you don't understand, and this is where we turn it around. Rather than chastising the dog, which is so easy for us to do because we're human, that's what we do. We tell the dog to shut up or quieten down or stop barking. Rather than that, what we teach is you actually acknowledge the dog at that point. The dog has done the right thing as a pack member. If we responded with, you know, bad dog, don't do that, shut up, what you're basically saying to the dog is, yeah, I'm as concerned as you are about that. You're getting emotionally involved. You're loud about it. Rather than saying, thank you, good girl. And then you go and have a look, see what's up. Perhaps there is something to be taken care of. And then there's a consequence if she doesn't listen to you. So, for example, you go to the front door, the doorbell rings, she barks, and you say, thanks, Lulu. You go to the front door. You've acknowledged her by saying thank you. So that's done. Now you're going to have a look, just in case there is something you need to take care of. And it is a doorbell, so you're going to go and see who it is at the door. Nothing needs to be done. There's no problem. There's no threat here. You have defined that for her by the fact that you went and you looked and you saw that there was no problem. Now, if she has more of an issue, if her barking continues or she's jumping up and down, she has now decided she's going to deal with it as well. And that's not her job. So the way you would show her that is you don't have any conversation with her. You've already acknowledged that her alerting you is fine. That's as far as it needs to go. You went to see that it was not a threat. And now she has consequence of action. These are natural consequences. And the natural consequence is that she's divided from the pack. She's removed. And we teach isolation, which is a natural consequence of her own behavior. You've already told her everything's fine. She is then removed from the pack. She is given time out, if you will. She can go to a bathroom. You shut the door. She's left in there until she's quiet. When she gets quiet, and we usually count five once they've, you know, gotten to that quiet place, we want her to recognize what behavior is needed to come out of the timeout. So she's quiet, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then what's important is that you are not saying anything to her, because again, you don't want to acknowledge bad behavior. You don't want to acknowledge her at this point. So you open the door backwards, so you're not looking at her. Looking at a dog is acknowledgement of the dog. So you turn your back, open the door backwards. That is her permission to come back into the environs with the pack. And now it's up to her to behave.
So we are the pack. Our family is the pack.
Your family is the pack, absolutely.
And the absolute bottom line key is that the master... And must it be one person in the pack?
No, any two-legged that lives in the house.
Is master.
Yes. And it can be a person in a wheelchair. It doesn't matter. It's the human that lives, the humans that live in the house. They're the decision makers. And it's decision makers. It's not. One thing I've stopped doing is using the word alpha. And it is in nature, out in the wild, the lead dogs are known as alpha dogs. But what I have found in my experience now is that if I use the word alpha, I see people flexing their muscles and I've got to be alpha dog and this sort of thing. And this work has nothing to do with domination or being power over your dog. It has to do with learning the key elements to showing leadership in a very gentle and in a way that the dog understands. Again, it's about the dog's perspective and recognizing that. Thank you, Jan, for doing the work. She did the research, studied the canines in the wild, and by studying them and then watching her dogs behave in a very similar way, identical way in some situations, we were able to tap into these four key areas. And we refer all the time to a chair. If you have a four-legged chair, you wouldn't sit on it if it were three-legged or two-legged. So by using these four key areas and showing leadership in these four areas, you can win back that role of leader decision maker from your dog.
We'll explain those four areas in just a moment, but I want to mention that there are over 200 dog listeners around the world. And if what we're talking about today intrigues you, you can go to Jan Fennell, and that's F-E-N-N-E-L-L, thedoglistener.com, and you can actually find a dog listener in your area. Penny, for instance, is in Northern California and works on one-on-one basis with people as a consultant, and then provides ongoing support and as well offers workshops. But I'm sure there are different dog listeners who work different ways.
Absolutely. There's some of our dog listeners work in rescue work. Some are show people, groomers. This is a language. This is a canine language that whatever your connection and contact with dogs is, whether it be kennels or whatever, if you know this language, you can work with the dogs with their cooperation. This is the point. You see police dogs, guide dogs, if all the service dogs, if they are able to tap into the resource fully, then you get the dog cooperating with you, and then you have even more success rather than battling with the dog.
You mentioned ami chien. It's A-M-I, as in friend in French, and chien, which is dog in
That's
French.
Right.
So it's friend of dog or
yes,
dog friend.
Exactly.
What does ami chien refer to? Is that the method?
It's a name given to the method. It's simply a way to refer to the fact that it's kind. I had one gal who came to a workshop of mine, and at the end of the workshop, it made me sad to hear this, but she said, I never knew I could be kind to my dog. I know that's pretty sad, but she had gone through basically traditional training, and training is different. This is not dog training. I talk about it being people training, because it's really teaching people how to relate to the dog as the dog understands. This
and
is
then
the
they
key.
Can relax.
Exactly. Exactly.
And because many dogs, and I've done so many shows about all the different types of problems that people encounter with their dogs. They bark too much. They jump up on people. They steal food from the table. All these behaviors, to me, say that there's a certain unsettled quality in the dog, right?
Definitely. Definitely. Well, and this is something we address, is that these behaviors or undesirable behaviors are in fact a symptom of a lacking. Or the lacking of leadership. That we usually say there are two different areas of dogs fall into two different areas. There are confident go-get-em dogs that, you know, I got leadership, no problem, call me in the morning type of thing. And we know those dogs, they're sort of making the decisions. You see them on the streets all the time. Then there's another group of dogs who we call reluctant leaders. They would rather not have that job of decision maker. Yet the people that they live with don't know how to show leadership and show love and show things that come naturally because we're humans. But again, we're looking at the dog perspective. That is misinterpreted by the dog. And so you end up with a dog feeling really important. And I teach this all the time, is importance means you're responsible, which means you're making decisions. So it's very important.
It's a slippery slope.
Totally is.
So let's talk about these four pillars.
Yes. Okay.
What are the four areas?
Well, when you look at them, of course, it comes down to how we live every day. So the first one might be food and the importance of being a provider as a leader. The next one would be status. Status is, how do I fit in this pack? What is my position? What's my job within the bounds of the pack? Then there is the perceived danger, which is basically, I don't understand that. You need to translate it, or I'm going to deal with it because I really don't like what this is and I don't know what it is, but I'm going to deal with it anyway. And then there's the walk, which we call the hunt, or the dogs call the hunt, because when you leave the bounds of your pack, your den, you are going for a hunt, because you're usually going to be looking either for somewhere new to live because you're being encroached by another pack, so it's not safe anymore, you need to move somewhere, or you're going on a hunt, you're going to go look for food. And so when you leave the home, that walk is, it's very important that we be taking leadership at that point, because otherwise the dog, again, is making decisions beyond the den.
Always have a dog on a leash?
Not necessarily, no. I think that you can work towards, again, the cooperation of the dog. When you are a leader, your dog wants to be with you. So even if the dog is allowed to go and forage and go and check out smells here and there and go off leash, go into open space, it behooves them to stay with the leader. Because if they are not with the leader, then if something comes up, they don't have anyone to support them, to make a decision for them. And once you've built this connection with your dog, then they want to be with you. It's not like you have to persuade them to be with you. You've done that already because they desire to be with you.
They come when called, for instance.
Because you've proved to them that you're the one that they need to be with. Like the food area, you are a provider. So by knowing that you are a provider, I want to be with that person. You know, I want to be with that being who's going to provide for me. I want to be with the person who's going to translate what I don't understand. And I'm going to be the one who leads me on my walk so that I'm safe, so that I don't, when I go out and I see that big, Lulu goes and she sees that big dog, then Mom turns and says, got it, no problem, Lulu, and off we go. So she looks at toward you as her interpreter, if you will, of the world.
What I have been doing in that situation is I go over and I pat the big dog to let her know that it's safe.
And that's okay. It's not proving to her that you're her leader, though. I mean, that's very nice that you can go over to a dog and she's not going to tell the dog off, or that, you know, you're able to give of yourself to another dog. You can show it also. You can show also that there's no problem with that dog by showing affection, if you will, to that dog. However, I would like her to accept it just because you stand there and you're okay with the world, with that big dog being close enough to perhaps be in her personal space.
So what should I do when we're walking down the street and someone is coming with a dog on a leash, mm-hmm. and that other dog doesn't appear to me to be a threat in any way, and she starts growling or doing what she does? What should I do?
Well, let's assume, first of all, that you have in place at home the four elements, that you are proving to her that you are her leader. I would suggest that if you practice this at home and do not go out for a walk until you are ready, which is the phrase we use is happy and in control. You may even avoid that thing, that particular scenario coming up at all, because back home you have proved to her that you are very well capable of being the leader above and beyond what she's able to do. And so out and about, she may say, hey, Mom, in her own way, growl, and you say, got it, Lulu, no problem, and on you go. But it's a matter of putting the groundwork in first. You don't, when I have consults, I always suggest people, and you can't force people to stay home, but I don't suggest people go out and take a walk with their dog who doesn't believe that their people are leaders. You're setting the dog up to fail. You're setting your dog up to not trust you anymore. If you were trustworthy fully, then wherever you go, she goes with, and she says, hey, wherever, no problem, I'm good with you. But if you go out too soon, then you find that, well, I'm not quite sure about this. You know what? You're too slow. I'm going to deal with it.
Which begs the question, can you start this sort of training with a 3-year-old dog?
Absolutely.
Or a 7-year-old dog?
Because this is their language, there is no age qualification, if you will. Certainly with a puppy, you have almost a blank slate and you can build from there. And it's really a joy to be able to start, even before the puppy comes home. You can be working on things with the, if you're working through a breeder, you can work with the breeder on certain things you can do to aid the puppy coming home. But yes, absolutely. In fact, with rescue work in particular, you can bring a dog from a very frantic and very stressed situation. I don't mean that the shelter is a stress situation, but just a stress place for them to calm finally by using Amishan bonding, because you are showing them they no longer have to care for everything for themselves, that you will do it for them.
Can you give me, Penny, just one short exercise that I can be working on now that would be an example of something where Lulu and I could begin to do this work together?
Well, it would be one small exercise in four areas.
Okay.
Well, so let's take, for example, the walk. There's a simple exercise you can do with thresholds. Thresholds are a very important thing for dogs. They are the beginning of something. And if you're leaving, like a big front door might be the place where the dog darts out of the front door. And I like to teach that, how does the dog know that there isn't broken glass outside your front door? They don't know that. Again, it's part of our world that we can interpret and the dog can't. So if you've got to get a mental picture in your head to do this exercise, let it be that. So you come to the front door, and rather than telling your dog how to behave here, we're going to show the dog by using the door to be a tool, to be an instrument. So the dog is right. I usually have the dog, but depending on the type of door, but they'll be on my left-hand side. And I'll go to put my hand on the door, on the handle to open the door. Now, if the dog moves forward towards the door, I take my hand away. And then when the dog steps back, then I'll put my hand up again. The idea is that their behavior, the fact that they stepped forward, caused me to withdraw from the what they want. It's the old what's in it for me. If I behave like this, if I step forward, I lose what I want, which is someone opening the door. So we continue from there. So you go to, you have now your hand on the handle, and you go to open the door, and the dog pushes its head forward. You close the door. And I'm not looking to shut the door on the dog's head, but the fact that they have no control, this is where it is, the control over the door is yours. They don't have it. They need you. Therefore, they need to have self-control to be listening to you for the signal to go through the door. So if you can open the door a little bit, but the dog stays put, there's possibilities here. So you go and open the door a little bit further. If they go to move forward, even just, you know, pushing their nose forward a little, shut the door. But don't say anything to the dog. Here, you could ruin everything by saying something like sit or stay there. Just be patient. Because the dog knows this, they figure it out. And you can almost see the brain ticking over as they figure this out. And we talked earlier about how we're working with an amazing resource. Here's a perfect example of using that resource. She figures it out. So then you go to open the door. She stayed put. She did it all by herself. You didn't hold her back. There's no leash involved. She stayed put by herself. And then you walk through the door and you give her the, come on then, Lulu, off we go. So there's no mad dashing out. You've checked to make sure there's no broken glass on the doorstep. And she has honored the fact that you have control over the door. Therefore, you are leadership material.
How many times do you have to go through this in order for them to get it? I mean, will they get
it? It depends on the dog. It depends on the dog's... some dogs, it's the first time. I have seen dogs get it just like that. And some dogs, it may be two or three times. But once they get it, you find that they do it at all thresholds, as if they're asking, well, this one too? This one too? And so you respond the same way. And before you know it, you have guests who come over to your home, and you go to a threshold, you go to open the door. Lulu stays there, and your friends say, oh, what a well-behaved dog. But you know she learned it all by herself, and you didn't have to say anything to her.
Well, I think that's the key here, is that I for me, it's a definite case of help, I'm talking and I can't shut up. I talk to her continuously and say, do this, don't do this, stop, you know, as though she's going to understand me.
Right. If you can let the dog learn, it's almost by learning by failure. I don't mean that. What do I mean? If I try this and I have a boundary put up by mom, then that must not be okay. If I try this and I'm left alone, it must be okay. So, for example, and here's a perfect example of when we would be tempted to make something more of it. So your dog, who looks very relaxed right now.
Holding her toy in her arms.
Isn't that a beautiful picture? So your dog is on its bed. Now, potentially, we could make that bed a throne by going over to the dog and paying homage to the dog right there. We have gone to the dog. We have now made a fuss of the dog on its potential throne. And now this dog could interpret, could, because some personalities are just fine with everything. You could be making this dog feel very important. And rather than do that, what I would have you do is you look at the dog on their bed and you take a picture in your mind. You say, yes, my dog did that all by herself. She's happy, relaxed. I'm going to get on with what I'm doing. You've left her alone. You haven't given her anything in the way of consequences. There is no consequence for going to your bed and hanging out. No consequences for what she's doing right now. Everything is just fine. But for example, the consequences of her, for example, jumping up on my leg would be simply my showing, my pushing her very gently down off my leg. So there's a consequence for her doing that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a natural
consequence.
But you don't
tell her down.
No, don't do this. Because again, with this, it's confusing. I teach how it's very important that in living with the dog, be very clear for them. So if I were to address Lulu as she jumped up at my leg, I would be, number one, I would be addressing her. That makes her important. I've made something of her behavior. The fact that she jumped up, so it likely will be repeated. And I confused her by using my hand to push her down. So say we take away all the verbiage and we simply use my hand very gently to push her down to show her that I don't want her there. Now she has a clear directive, if you will, from me. I don't want that. But I haven't said anything to her, so she didn't get any confusing information.
And then a few minutes later, once she's gotten the message, then you can address her.
You can call her over. That's another very important part of being a leader with your dog, is that you, for example, you wouldn't run up to the queen and say, hi, I'm here, or to the president. You just wouldn't do that. So you may be called to the king or queen. I did a wonderful consult the other day with a 6.5-year-old little girl. And the way that I was teaching this concept of her being the one to have people come to her, I mean, meaning the dog come to her rather than she go to the dog, she had a tiara, a play, dress-up tiara. So she put the dress-up tiara on her head, and I said, now you can call your dog to you. If your dog is wearing the tiara, then she's the decision-maker. But when you wear your tiara, you're the decision-maker.
Interesting. How do you handle behaviors that occur when you are not at home? Lulu has a particular habit and I think it's because she's not pleased that we've left her alone. We haven't taken her with us. She, and it's a funny little thing, she runs around and knocks over wastebaskets.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of that would be her role, and we can assume there are many dogs who have leadership, and we don't think we, just because we buy the food doesn't mean we're the leader, you know. We have that sort of misunderstanding there. Let's suggest that Lulu is the leader in your house, and that's what she believes. When you leave, so that leaves her the leader, that means you're her subordinate, or we call babies. If she loses her babies, they've gone off and done what we do when we go out and about. She has no control. She can't help you. She can't be there for you. So this would be, my suggestion would be, it's actually her way of dealing with the stress of not being able to help you as a leader, as your main person, if you will, or main being to take care of you. She can't do it. So it could be anything. It could be chewing on a doorway. It could be chewing up shoes. I mean, the symptom itself isn't so important. I'm sorry about your wastebasket.
No, it's fine because it has not been particularly destructive.
No.
It feels to be mischievous, but you're reframing that and telling me that she is stressed and her anxiety is propelling her to do this.
Exactly. If you think of it, we wouldn't stand by if our toddler were walking across the street. We'd do anything we could possibly do to go and help that toddler.
So to reverse this behavior, we really need to do something much larger. It's a much larger picture, which is to help her understand that she's not in charge.
Exactly. And when you say a larger picture, it's a whole picture, but it's simple to do. There, as I say, there's just these four areas which we cover. I mean, you live this. We feed our dogs. We come home and can reunite with our dogs and explain to them through our behavior where their status is. Threats happen, you know, left and right. We can be responding to them. We don't have to set up anything special. Life just happens. And so this is why it's a simple process. Where we fail is the fact that we're human and we want things right now. Our mentality is basically, you know, we want it yesterday. And for dogs, particularly if you're building trust with them, that will come when they're ready to give that over. And that's not something you can hurry, particularly if they've been let down by humans before. Then the fact that you keep up this work on a daily basis, it's just become everyday dealings with dogs. It's just the way I am. And I try to encourage people to be that same way so that they can see there can be a different relationship. Their dog can relax and enjoy life more without the responsibilities that come from the misinformation we give them.
How quickly do most people see a change in their dog's behavior upon practicing these various techniques?
Again, it depends on the dog, but I have been accused of drugging dogs at the consult because I remember one of my first, a wonderful lab called Hampton, and he was a jumpy, in-your-face kind of a dog, big dog. I mean, he was probably 110 pounds worth of dog. And at the consult, he's lying under the kitchen table. And the lady, the client said, "What have you done to my dog?" And I said, "Well, I'm just practicing what I'm teaching you." And she had not seen this behavior in him. So it can be instantaneous. With the reluctant leaders, we talked about the two different groups, the confidence and the reluctance. Sometimes the reluctant leaders are the ones who are the ones who are ready to give it up more quickly. But it depends on the dog, honestly. The confident leaders, you know what? They're confident for a reason. If they were in the wild, they could well have taken on a leadership role. But since they're domestic dogs, that just doesn't fit with the program. You know, this is, you know, they're our companions, and they're not equipped to be able to decipher the world.
It's fascinating work. I want to let people know once again about this book by Jan Fennell. It's called The Dog Listener, with a new comprehensive 30-day training guide. So there's some time frame for you there. It's subtitled Learn How to Communicate with Your Dog for Willing Cooperation. And also there is a DVD, The Dog Listener. We will put a link on Smarter Shopping on the Good Dog Podcast site. As long as the book is in print and available on Amazon.com, people can buy it right through our site. And then as well, to find out if there is a dog listener in your area with whom you can work, you can go to janfennellthedoglistener.com, and somewhere in there you can click on
Worldwide Dog Listeners. Yeah.
There you go. Worldwide Dog Listeners. Penny Locke, thanks so much for being here today.
And I have a local contact for those who are here in the California, Nevada, Arizona type of the West Coast area.
And that's, absolutely.
And my website is allabout-canines, spelled out canines.com.
allabout-canines.com.
That's right.
Thanks so much, Penny.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Good Dog Podcast, and thanks for your emails. I do respond not only directly, but when you make a request for a particular topic or guest, generally speaking, we figure out how to answer that. I get more requests for topics than guests. If there's someone whom you know, an expert on dogs, a trainer, a behaviorist, a nutritionist, a veterinarian, anyone whom you think has a great story to tell, please let me know. You can send an email to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.